Hi, this is Aliza Licht, and this is Leave Your Mark, the podcast, where I brew fresh career advice with some of my most inspiring and successful friends. It's professional advice that you can action immediately, whether you're just starting out in your career or well on your way. With a massive to-do list and a large cup of coffee, I promise that you can get it all done and still have time to post about it.
I don't normally just read the straight up bio of my guests, but Jennifer Lancaster, this bio on your website is so good that I'm just going to read it because it shows your personality and your personal brand so well. Jennifer Lancaster is the New York Times bestselling author of 9 memoirs and 5 adult novels and 1 young adult book. Parentheses, and possibly less lazy than I claim. She has sold well over 1 million books, maybe more. I should check, also in parentheses. Jen has appeared on The Today Show, The Joy Behar Show, and Fox News Live. And after a corporate layoff in 2001, down on her luck and stuck selling off cars, jewelry, and designer purses, parentheses, which sucked, FYI, Jen launched a website to air her frustrations about unemployment. She began detailing her descent from designer clothing and spa visits to the unemployment line on her blog, gensylvania.com. Her acerbic wit quickly won the blog a massive following, and Jen's first memoir, Bitter is the New Black, was published by the Penguin Random House imprint NAL in 2006. Since then, she has published, parentheses, at least 1 book a year, and her memoir, The Tao of Martha, was optioned for a sitcom by Fox. Jennifer Lancaster has a new book coming out called House Moms. And Jennifer, welcome to Leave Your Mark. I am so excited to have you on the show because first and foremost, Jennifer was the editor for my latest book on brand. So that is how we met. And you also introduced me to the wonderful Liz Elting, where you were her writing partner for Dream Big and Win. So now we have all these things in common. So welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here. This is the first time I've actually looked nice when I've talked to you, because it's usually
I feel like you're always, anytime I've seen you on Zoom, you've always been put together. You've always had a full face makeup, for sure.
You know what it is? It's the pearls. Pearls are part of my brand. You always look dressier when you are wearing pearls. I love that boys are wearing pearls now. It's like, you guys finally caught on.
Okay. You need to walk us through this unemployment inspo to blog. And also, what did you hit on? What nerve did you hit on when that gensylvania.com caught fire?
First of all, that was not my intention. My intention was just to complain to a larger audience than just my husband. That was all I was doing. I was laid off shortly after 9/11 in Chicago. And at the same time in Chicago, Arthur Anderson had massive layoffs, and Anderson and Company had massive layoffs. So I was competing against all these tech people who had much more experience and much better educations. So it was grim. It was grim finding jobs because I came up during the dot-com era. So I thought, well, it's always going to be like this. I'm always going to be a vice president 5 years into my professional tenure. And I didn't know that that wasn't reality.
What was your actual job?
The one that I was laid off from, I had been a VP, an associate VP at a company called Zacks.com. I left that job to go work for a corporate communications company, and I was in charge of all the video content. I had teams in other states. I sold streaming media services. I sold webcasts. My background had been in email marketing. So I had some tech in my background, but selling, not creating, not using.
Were you just like the funniest, most just savvy sartorialist in the office? Like, you just feel like you were always sharp-witted, always had a word.
I was, and it often didn't land. So I made myself laugh. I don't know that I made anyone else laugh. I can think of one thing that I said to one of my bosses, which was devastating. He and his wife had moved to Chicago from Kansas City, and I had quit the job that I'd worked for that old boss. And I was transitioning into a new job and I had 2 or 3 weeks free. And I said, listen, I have 3 weeks free because his wife didn't work. And all she did was like hang out with her dog. And I said, listen, Mary and I can go to museums. We can do this. We can do that. And he said, oh, Mary doesn't really like to go to museums. And I said, so what you're telling me is all your wife wants to do is hang out with her dog. And I thought that was hilarious because she also would like put her dog in costumes. So this is way before that was on brand for anyone. So I said, so all your wife wants to do is hang out with your dog in vampire costumes. And everyone around me thought it was funny, but my old boss did not think that was funny. So I had the timing, but I didn't know how to say things in an appropriate time. Does that make
which
sense?
Which has served you well as a novelist, for sure.
Yes.
Okay, so you start this blog, you're complaining about unemployment. At what point did you realize, oh shit, I'm a writer? This is like real.
Well, here's the thing. I always knew that I was a writer. I had my first byline in 1983 on my high school newspaper. I always knew that I wanted to be a writer. And I was going to go to college to study journalism, and I graduated in 85. And sometime around then, my father, who has a Boston accent, said, Jennifer, you're going to graduate and make $17,000 a year. And I thought, I don't like the sound of that. So I put the writing thing aside. I had a number of different majors since I was in college forever. I ended up graduating with a political science degree, which is possibly the most useless undergrad degree you can get. But it trains you to write, and it trains you to think, and it trains you to be logical. So it's not entirely useless, but it's not great. So it's something that I always loved. It was always the way that I could express myself. If I were just having an argument with someone, I would get two in my head and I couldn't get it out. But if I put it on paper, I would nail it. So I knew that I needed paper to express myself properly. So it's something that I always loved. I had a blog before they were called blogs. I thought I just had a website. And there was one other person who was doing sort of the same thing that I was doing. It was this girl named Karen Bosnack, and she invented cyber begging. Now, don't make fun of her because she's one of my best friends now. Cyber begging. She had a website called Save Karen because she was a TV producer in New York. She'd gotten herself $20,000 worth of credit card debt, and she was high at the grocery store, and she saw an ad for something, and she thought, if I could get everyone to give me a dollar, if I could get 20,000 people to give me a dollar, then I could pay off my debt. And that's, she created the Save Karen website asking people to send her a dollar. And she would say something nice to them. She would put up funny content. And this incensed me. I'm like, this person is my enemy. I hate her. And then she got a book deal out of it. She was everywhere. She'd been on the Today Show 3 times. Like, they turned down Oprah because they thought they were going to get someone better. And then I thought, and I have said this to Karen a million times, I thought, if this idiot can do it, I can do it. I can write dumb things. I can just do stream of consciousness stuff. And eventually, when we did meet in 2006, we became great friends. And now we've written screenplays together. She is my partner on Substack. She's one of my favorite people in the world.
Oh, but that's such a happy ending after you called her an idiot.
Well, yeah. She knows.
Yeah, she knows. And if she doesn't, she will hear this and know.
I called her, okay, if this idiot can do it, then this idiot can do it. So believe me, I put us in the same realm. But as I started writing, people really connected with it. And literally all I was doing was complaining about bad job interviews. There was one PR place I went. I was interviewed 6 times. I had to give a marketing plan. I had to give client lists. They got all of this work out of me. And they said, oh, no, I think we're going to not do this. But we'll keep all of your information that you've given us to help us build our business.
Yeah. I just posted about this 2 weeks ago, these sort of homework projects for candidates, because they're insane what people are asked to do to get the job. Meanwhile, they're going to take all your ideas and run with it.
Right. Right. It infuriated me. And I knew that I had so much to give. I did things like take out ads in the Chicago Tribune. And this all ended up being part of my first book because I thought, oh, this will be really clever that I want a job so I can buy cute shoes. And heard from a lot of foot fetishists. Didn't know that was a thing. Discovered that. So all of these things that I tried to do. And meanwhile, my husband ended up getting laid off. So all of a sudden we were 2 executives that had nothing. And it was awful. I mean, it was awful. And the only way I can deal with things is to make them funny. Meanwhile, my husband was going through a terrible bout of depression. So I thought, I've got to get him help. I've got to get us out of this. And I just poured my frustrations onto a website. And then it began to grow and it began to grow. And then I thought, maybe I can do something with this writing.
Yeah.
What funny is I had no idea how to write a query letter. I wanted to query literary agents, but I had no idea. So I thought,
wait, what? Explain to people what that is.
A query letter is where you say who you are, what you do, you propose your project, and you try to get them to be interested in representing you and taking whatever you write to publishers to sell. And I didn't know how to do that. I had no idea. I could not figure it out. This was really early days of Google. I didn't know how to do it, but I knew how to get people to a website because I had done email marketing in other jobs. And this was at the end of the 90s when nobody did that. So I thought, well, I'll just get them to come to me. So I put a couple of my best pieces up on Craigslist. They made best of Craigslist. And at the bottom, which nobody did at the time, I put my URL. So I had literary agents querying me.
Wow. I love that.
Wasn't until I changed agents after having written maybe 7 or 8 New York Times bestsellers that I had to write my first query letter. And it was still hard.
All right. Let's talk about your process, because you are like a machine. I feel like you go head down, like hardcore. I mean, you churn out these books. You're probably done with your next one, and your next one hasn't even come out yet.
True.
So House Moms has yet to be released. And yep. Is the next book done already?
Yes.
Is the next book after that book done already?
No, but I have written other clients' books in the interim. One of the things that I did, it didn't blow up my career, but it didn't help my career that I wrote books faster than my readers could read. There was an 18-month period where I had 6 titles out between hardcover and paperback. You can't flood the market like that. I didn't know that. I thought my publishers would say, whoa, let's slow down. Let's dole these out. But I just wanted to work. So I didn't know.
So let's just quantity-wise, at any given moment, how many of your own books are you working on? How many are you ghostwriting? And how many are you editing?
Well, I'm waiting to get the edits back from my next novel. I am in the middle of ghostwriting 1, 2 books for now. I'm pitching other ones. And I also started this entire sideline business doing newsletters. Between newsletters and podcasts, this is the best way to relay information to your audience, to your consumers. It's the most trusted source of information. So as an offshoot through Josh Flagg from Million Dollar Listing, we became really good friends after I co-authored his book. And he has this media company. It's like, can you ghostwrite some of these newsletters? So I know everything that's happening in real estate right now. Everything.
That's good. And you are looking to buy a house. So that, I think that's convenient, yeah. Right? Yeah. But Jen, there's only so many hours in the day.
And I work all of them.
Okay. So we're going to get into the creative process in a minute, but what is your schedule? Like, how do you block your time to do all these things?
I get up, I know what to do. And I'll work on 5 or 6 projects during the day. I work on what's interesting to me until it's not interesting. And then I go on to something else. Like about 5 years ago, I started a resale business, which has nothing to do with anything that I do, except that it started because I'd lost a ton of weight. Found it all during the pandemic. Wish I hadn't sold those things, but I'd lost a ton of weight. I had 200 items that were brand new with tags, thousands of dollars, and I had nothing that fit me because I had gotten so thin, which is not a problem I thought I would ever have. So right. I'm like, what do I do with these? So I found a way to sell them online. It was fun. It was creative. When you work in books, it's 2 years from start to finish until the process is over and what you've created is in someone's hand. When you sell something online, that transaction can be over in 3 days. And I loved the immediacy of it. So after I had sold everything, I thought, what if I started going to thrift stores? And right now in my basement, I have probably 2,000 pieces of clothing because I'm really good at finding great quality. I mean, you're a fashion person. I mean, nothing makes me happier than beautiful fabrics and wrapped seams and like nicely sewn buttons. So I look for quality things and then I resell them. So if I've had a really long, hard day of creative, I'll come down to what you're seeing is my photography studio. I'll come down and take pictures of things because I always want to be doing something, because when I do this, then I get to engage a different muscle in my brain and I'll listen to murder podcasts. I have to be doing something always.
What time does your work day end?
My workday, I say, starts when I get up, because I get up and I read 4 newspapers. And you think, oh, that makes you so smart. I have yet to solve the stupid crossroads on the New York Times. I have yet to get it right. So every day I wake up frustrated because I can't do this damn thing. But I probably read for the first 2 hours of my day. Then I work until I have earned myself a shower. So I work until, I don't know, probably like 2. That's probably when I shower. And then I come back and I work until dinner. And after dinner, I might put in a couple of more hours of work. Not because I have to, but because this is what I love.
Where do you get your creative ideas from?
I don't know how not to get them, because I'm nosy. I'm naturally nosy. I pay attention to everything. There's a story that I always bring up. It was Valentine's Day. I was in line at Target. It was first thing in the morning. I was getting, I don't know, cat litter or something. And there was a guy in front of me, and I happened to look at what he was buying. He was buying some roses from Target. He had a card from Target. He had a giant handle of vodka and an enormous family-sized box of anti-diarrheal medicine. And I thought, someone is going to have the weirdest Valentine's Day ever. And I was behind him crying, laughing, just imagining what his day was going to be like. Nobody in front of me thought it was weird. Nobody behind me thought it was weird. But I pieced together these little scenarios. I'm always telling a story. Like right now, I am at war with the guy who lives across the street who does not know I exist. But he has done so many micro things to offend me that it thrills me to have someone to pour my energy into to dislike. He's done nothing wrong, but I despise him all the same. He has a loud car. He works on his loud car. Also, I don't know their situation, but they have a garage sale every other week. This makes me crazy because he's been selling the same shovel since May. Since May, there has been a stupid shovel sitting out front, and I account for his time. I think you've spent 3 hours of your week, 3 days of your weekend trying to sell this stupid shovel when you could have just donated it and written it off. These are the things that I'm obsessed with.
You absolutely kill me. All right. So you're flowing with creative ideas. For people who have an aspiring novel inside them and have no idea where to start, what's your process?
Sit down in front of a computer and start writing things. You can't edit what you don't write. If you have an idea inside of you, and if you are dying to tell this story, don't tell people about it. Just start it. I mean, I cannot tell you how many letters I've gotten over the years from people saying, I can't find the time to do this. Well, then it's not priority. You will find the time to do the things that you like. That's it. And you have to write it for yourself. I never started off to write for an audience. I never thought, what will people connect with? Everything I have ever written has been for me. So when it does connect, it's a little bit weird to me. Really? That's what's interesting to you?
So you don't do outlines for any of your books. You just write.
No, I have to do outlines when I get to the process of it selling, because I've never written anything then sold, but I always sell based on an idea. So you do have to do an outline to let the publisher know that you're not just going to lose your mind halfway in between. But like where I get my ideas, years ago, my husband had his 20th year high school reunion, and it went badly, not because of anything that he did, but it was at a country club and they only had 2 CDs. One was Prince and one was like Shania Twain. So that's all they had for music. And it was this terrible night. And my husband didn't have the best high school experience, but you know, he eventually grew into himself and the army helped him. And now I think he's really a great man. So he was obsessed with the idea of his 25th reunion. He's like, it's going to be great this time. So he made himself in charge of it. And we did things like, you know what? We're just going to pay for an open bar. You and I, this is going to be your legacy 25 years later. Wow. From Noblesville High School. That's, we're going to do an open bar. And I just gotten a really good deal. So I bought a Jaguar convertible. I'm like, you drive that down there. You park that out front. This is going to be your moment. And he talked so much about this stupid high school reunion. I don't even want to go. I don't want any part of this. You go, you have a great time. And I started having dreams about high school reunions. And that ended up being my book, Here I Go Again, which is about a high school mean girl that travels back in time. It's a magical realism book. And that's where it came from. And what's so funny is it was just this book about a high school mean girl who kind of gets her comeuppance. And I have never gotten so many starred reviews. I mean, I got starred reviews from Publishers Weekly, from Kirkus, who hates everyone and everything, and that's from so Booklet. I mean, they just, but it just, it connected with people. So, I mean, I always am open to ideas and I'm always processing something and I'm always making up stories about something. I mean, I could tell you the stories about the birds that I see that land in the pond behind my house. Everybody's got a backstory.
Their characters. How do you think about character development? Like, do you take real qualities from people you know and make them into characters?
Oh, absolutely. It's sort of frustrating in the beginning when I started writing fiction. I have such a nonfiction fan base that they were so anti-fiction. And I thought, like, I only have so many things happening in my life right now. I can't
right.
turn
you know what? You raise a good point because they were following the blog because it was right. your stories. Very good point.
Right. So there's always bits of me in every character. There are things that I have experienced in my life in every character. What really took my novel writing to the next level was going to Second City. I did a few years of classes there. I did stand-up classes, and that was the best thing that ever happened to me because I was living in this little affluent bubble of Lake Forest, Illinois, and I didn't know what the world was like. I had become the person that I never thought that I would be. Like, well, everything's fine. Why can't you just eat cake? And I went to these classes at Second City with people from all over the city, from all walks of life. And I learned I had to work harder on my comedy. I couldn't punch down. You can't do that anymore. And I had to take in everyone's perspective. The person who I think had the biggest impact on me is my friend Andre. Andre is a Black man. Andre is gay. The first day of class, he had on this Harvard sweatshirt. And our instructor was like, oh, you went to Harvard? And he said, no, this is what I wear so white people aren't afraid of me, which is a great line. But he wasn't joking.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So it opened my eyes and it opened my mind. And I have never been the same since then. And it's taught me so much that on top of that, I took years of screenwriting classes there. And I had been so used to, I mean, for years, people standing in line waiting to get my autograph and then being in classes with people reading my work saying, it's not your best, do better. Here's what you need to do. And listening to them, I really had to put my ego aside and take in what they were saying. And I know that I'm so much better for it. I know that I am.
That's so powerful. It's really so powerful.
I promise Leave Your Mark will be right back after a quick message from our sponsor. Are you ready for more career advice? Welcome back to Leave Your Mark.
Okay, house moms. Tell everyone about House Moms, because when I read the premise of this book, I was like, oh, this is so you, but also so smart.
Thank you. Well, this book was never supposed to be. Because it was never supposed to be. I am represented by CAA, and I was really trying hard before the pandemic to make something happen in television. And I had written a few things, and this was really before I had done a lot of the screenwriting classes, so I wasn't getting it. So CAA, my agents at CAA said, send us 5 ideas and we will tell you which idea you need to develop. I had 4 that were straight fire. These ideas were fantastic, but they said 5. So I couldn't leave a blank space. Okay. That's not who I am. If you tell me 5, you're going to get 5. So I literally pulled an idea out of the air. Sorority house moms have adventures. Whatever. What I didn't realize is that both of my agents had gone to like USC, UCLA, and they had been in sororities and like, this is it. So then I found myself having to develop a script based on a throwaway idea. So I'm like, okay.
Meanwhile, how long did it take you to develop the 4 other ones? Probably a while.
Oh, I worked on them for so long. These are amazing. I can't even now remember what these ideas were. So then all of a sudden I had a premise and I had to create a story around it. So I ended up working on the screenplay for House Moms for a year. And this is how things work in Hollywood. And it was an education. I was working with a big producer, big production company, and everybody was so behind this thing. We're like, this is it. This is what's going to put you on the map. And the day that my producer went to have drinks with her contact at ABC, because ABC had a first look deal for everything, was the day a Bachelor in Paradise scandal broke. So what I have learned from working with my ghostwriting clients is you really have to plan your moment. That was the wrong moment for her to bring up my work, because the producer said, that doesn't sound like anything we'd like, because they were having a terrible day because their big franchise was in danger of crumbling. And so an entire year of work flew out the window. Oh. And at that point, I put so much work into this. I'm like, I want people to know this story, because I came up with great backstories. With scripts, you can't write as much as you want. And then I thought, why don't I make this a book? Why don't I really look at who they are inside instead of just showing it through their actions? Let's get into their mind. Let's figure out what their thought processes are. Let's make these full-blown three-dimensional people. So I am really fortunate to be working with Amazon. I did my first nonfiction with them back in 2020. I love them. I love the way they do business. They make it so easy on the author, because I don't want to be my own publicist. That's not what I love. I love the work. I don't love the paperwork. It's not what I want to do.
Amazon is publishing the book.
Correct. I am with their little A imprint. It's no different than anything you'd see at Penguin Random House, at HarperCollins. But the huge advantage that they have is that they're not a publisher. They're a data company. So if I write a book about a sorority house mom, any person that's ever bought anything vaguely related to a sorority is notified that
this is
available. So it's a data company. Anybody that's ever purchased one of my books through them, they know. And you can't get on the Times list if you are an Amazon author, because they have such an unfair advantage, because they're a data company.
Wow. And it's going to be super interesting to see the numbers then on this book, since it's like.
Well, also, so what I really appreciate about Amazon is around, I don't know, 2018, I had a manuscript that I was ready to sell, and my agent went on maternity leave for 6 months. And I like, well, I need to make some money because that's how I live indoors. And she's like, well, on maternity leave, there's not anything I can do for you. And I don't want to mess with somebody's
crazy.
But I don't want to mess with someone's maternity leave. And I don't understand the policies we have in this country that are not women friendly. But I also needed somebody to sell my book. So I thought, why don't I just take these things and self-publish them? Why don't I do that? I put together a book and published it within 2 months. It sold more than any of my other books, like the first couple of months. I mean, but I didn't get in on any list because it was self-published. But even though I had these sales numbers that were phenomenal, every other publisher looked at me after that and they're like, you self-published? Ugh. Amazon looked at it and said, you self-published, and look at how much you sold. So they have my loyalty.
It's interesting because in every industry, there is this sort of like badge of honor, right? Like it used to be in fashion. Oh, you need to be sold by a department store because that is going to give you the credibility that you really arrived, right? When direct-to-consumer brands popped up, it was all of a sudden, oh, wait, we can go directly to the customer. We don't need to sell at Saks or Bergdorf. So it's similar to that. It's like there's traditional publishing, and I totally understand why they would be like self-published.
Oh, yeah.
It's like so lowbrow. But right. At the end of the day, like I think there's something to be said for the mechanism of how the book gets in the world. And we know that the publishing industry is really, really slow to evolve into the current state of the world.
I have a friend who wrote the most fantastic book. It's called Everybody Come Alive, Marcia Alvis Walker. It is the book that you read and it is life-changing. And one of the publishers that she was speaking to when she was selling her book said to her, well, we've already published one Black author this month, so that's it. Like, this is in 2002 or 2022. Like,
mic drop. That person should be fired. Let's just say.
Yeah. Yeah. And then her book came out and it didn't get the publicity it should have, but it's essays and reflections on being a Black woman and a Christian woman in this country. And that is not anything that, like, this is probably not for me. It is so beautiful. It is like reading poetry. It is one of the best things I have ever read in my entire life. And it's just her life and her experience. And I don't really consider myself any sort of religion, but she uses some Bible stories to make points. And I'm like, this is actually interesting. This is really fascinating. I had no idea. I only thought people used the Bible as a weapon. I didn't know you could look at it as a source of comfort and strength. Didn't occur to me.
Yeah.
So it's spectacular.
I mean, there's so many amazing books that just don't have their moment because, let's face it, authors are expected to be marketers.
Yeah.
I mean, since On Brand has come out, that's where I've found myself falling, as you know, because you introduced me to Liz, like falling into this place of like marketing meets books where it's like personal branding, because everyone thinks the job is writing the book, but the job is actually marketing the book.
Writing is the blessing. The writing is the fun part. And with Amazon, I don't have to do that much of what I don't like. That's why I like ghostwriting so much. I get to do the project. I get to dig into it. Yeah. I get to develop it. But then the paperwork part is what I call it. I don't have to do it that much.
Let's talk about your editing skills. So Jennifer, I have to say, I was very lucky because my real editor, Amanda Englander, who's responsible for Leave Your Mark and On Brand, was too busy for me to do this book. And basically brought Jennifer in to edit On Brand. Jennifer, I will never forget, we were on Zoom and you had gone through the first draft and you were like, so you're going to hate me for 3 days. I was like, oh my God, what does she mean?
Because I did just rubber stamp it. Like, this is really good. Here's how it can be better.
Yeah, totally. And I also really appreciated how you infused your own knowledge and ideas of like the world around us, which was so super helpful because it was just like almost like a springboard. I'm like, oh, right, that. And then I would go off and do it. So thank you so much.
I love doing it. And when I got your book, I thought, I really don't need to worry about branding. I don't need to worry. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And what I learned more than anything is I've always been a connector, but now I am actively a connector because I didn't realize how important that is. So I'm always trying to bring people together now. And I think I'm much better about saying thank you and acknowledging things and keeping in touch, like all the things that you instructed. I'm like, this is a really good manual, not just for building your brand, but living a nice life.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, you know what? It also makes you feel good, right? When you're able to like put people together, I think that's also like an amazing, just feel good moment. Okay. So House Moms is coming out. You have 8,500 other books coming after that. If someone is just discovering you now, is there a certain book that you would want them to start with?
The one I am most proud of in my nonfiction is Welcome to the United States of Anxiety. That came out in October of 2020, which is possibly the worst time on the face of the earth to write a book about how everything is going to be okay prior to the election, mid-pandemic, because it was all done before the pandemic had ever started. So I made sure we put a big note at the beginning saying, listen, this is just beginning. We don't know what is going to happen. But I challenged myself and my way of thinking because every other one of my memoirs is just, here's some stupid shit that I did. Here's how I gave myself food poisoning. It was pretty light, but this one was heavily research-based. So here are things that I think, and here is the research to back this up. I wrote, my favorite thing I've ever written in my entire life is a chapter on the environment. And that wasn't anything, because I wondered, do we really need to care about this? Do we not need to care about this? And I dug in and I did the work and I found out about this group that had been around for 30 years, specifically formed to give out misinformation. And it was sponsored by the oil companies. So people were like, I don't think global warming is a thing. I mean, that was their job. That was their job. And the thing that really brought it home to me was reading about how Burberry had burned like $80 million worth of product because they didn't want it ending up on the gray market. They didn't want it ending up in TJ Maxx. And I lost my mind. I just lost my mind because I thought, well, I don't want the stuff that I've paid for, that I paid full price for, to be devalued. But I also don't want to kill off species because I need to have more self-esteem. So it is my favorite chapter that I've ever done. So welcome to the United States of Anxiety for nonfiction. Another nonfiction that I really love was The Tao of Martha. That one's really special to me. I spent a year of my life trying to live by Martha Stewart's dictates, thinking it would help improve me. And it did in some ways, and it didn't in some ways. And that was the one that sold to Fox with Martha herself involved, which was crazy.
So cool.
But then, well, what's so funny about that one is when it sold, and I didn't get to be part of any of the meetings, like they hooked me up with the screenwriter, didn't want me involved in the process. It wasn't until after that, they're like, oh, maybe you are an asset. Maybe you should be involved in this stuff. But for a month after Fox decided not to make the pilot, nobody told Martha. All of the different sets of agents were fighting over who had to break the news to her.
Oh, I am not surprised about that.
Yeah. So it didn't happen. But I heard about Martha in a meeting telling the folks, because they went, you know, every network and there were other bids, just saying, like, I like that someone looks at me as their God.
Well, I did a segment with Martha many years ago on how to tie the DKNY cozy wrap sweater 12 different ways.
Oh.
And on air, I've said this to you because it's the funniest thing. On air, she's like, well, what about like when I wear my sweatsuit in the airport? And this is at a phase in my life where I was like, 4-inch heels, sneakers are evil, sweatsuits, what? So I literally look at her and I'm like, I have no words for that. Literally on a live segment. Like I literally shamed her on air. And then afterwards I was like, she's going to come after me and kill me. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. But she's tough. She's tough, but she's done incredible things. And she's really been able to reinvigorate her brand over these years.
The whole reason I wrote that book was that I didn't like her. Like I think that she's mean. And then she went to prison and she rose to the occasion. She made friends. She made microwave meals. She learned how to crochet with people. And I'm like, yeah, this is somebody who is not going to let anyone dictate what her life should be. That's what I connected with.
So going back to your preferences on what you get excited by, do you feel like you're more inspired these days by fiction than you are nonfiction?
I am, only because there's just not that much interesting happening in my life. I mean, I'm literally at war with the stranger who doesn't know that I exist.
Does it have to be about you? Nonfiction?
Generally, that's what people want from me. They want memoirs. I mean, I liked doing sort of the research memoir, but I don't know that there's a huge market for it right now. Every time I have written nonfiction, I have found myself in situations that I should have extricated myself from, but didn't, because I thought it would be funny. So I get myself into so few of those situations now that I don't have the material. Like every book, I learned something about myself. I learned, here's how you improve this. Here's how you do that. I don't have that much to improve right now. And I think anything that I did right now would just be really self-indulgent. And I don't think people need that right now. I think people need an escape.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Okay, going back to the principles of on brand, describe your personal brand in 3 words.
I would be hesitant if I didn't say preppy. I read the Preppy Handbook when I was 12. Had no idea it was satire. And I thought, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. I moved to Lake Forest, Illinois, because Lisa Birnbach mentioned it in the book. That was like, okay, that's where I'm going, because that's a preppy place. I'm going there. I think preppy. I think creative. And I think offbeat.
Okay.
I'm not someone who claps on the beat. I'm somebody who sees something entirely different. If the entire stadium is watching the marching band, I'm looking at something back in the stands. I don't focus on the same things as everyone.
I love that one. I love that one. All right. Last question, Jennifer. How do you ultimately want to leave your mark?
Years and years ago, I think I was probably early teens, I had this epiphany and I thought, my goal in life is to help people along the way. that was so clear to me that I think I was trying to manage a friend fight or try to negotiate, bring people together. And then I thought, my job is to help people along the way. So I can tell you so many stories of people who were like, I was in the hospital and my mother had cancer. And I read your book and it gave me the first laugh that I had. I don't have to last forever, but if I can be there for people and not know that I'm there, but if I can be there and help them through something, if I can help them work through something through my words, then I feel like I will have done my job.
Well, that's a great answer. And I think that you are definitely doing that. Jennifer, I am so glad we know each other. I am so glad we're friends. And I'm so excited for House Moms and everything that comes after.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Leave Your Mark. Leave Your Mark is a production of Leave Your Mark LLC and Money News Network. I'm your host, Aliza Licht, and if you want to learn more about how you can work with me or book my services, go to alizalicht.com. Don't forget to pick up a copy of my best-selling career advice book, Leave Your Mark, and my new book, On Brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception. Truly everything you need to build your personal brand or change the way people think about you. And just remember this, if change doesn't hurt a little, it's not change. Keep on rocking.